then he floated briskly toward the force field containment. Anakin knew exactly what had to be done to get them free.
The control panel's turned away from us, but I think there's a big slot for a sort of metal key right in the middle of it.
Yes, there is.
Step by step, Anakin guided Q-9 to adjust the control so that the side of the force field where the children were held was as low as it could go.
All right, here goes,
Anakin said at last. He extended his arms and spread his stubby fingers as far as they would go. He shut his eyes and stepped forward until his hands were in contact with the force field. Pushing slowly, gently, he thrust his hands deeper and deeper into the weakened force field. The field around his hands began to shimmer and spark brightly at first, but then fading away, until Anakin was standing in a pushed-out bubble of the force field.
"Help me,"
he said to his brother and sister. Jason and Jaina stepped cautiously forward into the extruded bubble. They pushed together, stretching the field, until the tip of Anakin's finger was outside the field. The children held hands and slowly moved out from the field. The stretched-out part of the force field shimmered and sparked one last time, and then retracted, merging into the rest of the field as if there had never been a distortion in its surface.
"That was impossible, of course," said Q-9. "No one can walk through a force field that way."
"We didn't go through it, really," Anakin said. "It was more like we stretched it out until there was room between the field, and then I just pushed the parts apart and went through."
"Anakin, what about Chewbacca and Ebrahim and Aunt Marcia?" asked Jaina.
Anakin shook his head.
"I don't think I can do it from this side. Not to pull people through."
"Can you do anything with the control panel?" Jaina asked.
"No, I can make stuff do what it's supposed to do. The lock's doing what it's supposed to do. It's already working."
Ebrahim spoke up.
"If we indeed cannot get out, the children must attempt to escape on their own. With your help, of course, Q-9.
"How? How are we supposed to get away?"
"By flying in the Millennium Falcon, of course."
The alarm buzzer squawked wildly in Tendra Rezant's ship, the gentleman caller. What had broken down this time? She checked all the displays but saw nothing but a green board. Then she remembered. She had installed this alarm herself, the one that went off when the Navicomputer detected the interdiction field going down. The interdiction field going down. She scrambled into the pilot's seat and set to work setting the Navicomputer. She had to move fast. Whoever controlled the interdiction field might well bring it back up again at any time. She would go to center point. The last she had heard from Lando, it had seemed he was heading that way. Admiral Ocelage himself met the Lady Luck when she landed on the hangar deck of the intruder. He led the crew to his private quarters, where Lieutenant Belindi Kalenda briefed him about what they had discovered on Centerpoint.
"So if I understand you correctly," Ocelage said, "if we possessed a planetary repulsor in time to deflect the hyperspace tractor repulsor shot from Centerpoint, then that would save all the good people of Bovoyegan. And perhaps, just incidentally, win us the war. Do I have that about right?"
"Just about right, sir," said Lieutenant Kalenda.
"However, it is more than a question of possessing the repulsor. It is knowing how to use it, and I'm not sure Thrakan Sal Solo is able to control it."
"But they fired it already."
"Not really, sir. It was an uncontrolled startup. There was a massive burst of uncontrolled repulsor radiation, that's all. The Salonian repulsor shot was much more controlled. And there's another reason. Remember, his assault boat went into the repulsor after it was fired. We're only assuming it was his techs who fired it."
"After seeing that broadcast he made, I'll tell you who I think set it off," said Lando. "The children. I think they managed to turn it on by accident. The repulsor burst attracted Thrakken's attention the same as it did yours, and he got there first."
"Oh, don't be absurd," Ocelage said.
"But all this is beside the point. Sal Solo has the repulsor now, and I have an assault force preparing to go in and take it from him."
Ocelage pushed a button on his desktop comm unit.
Yes, what is it?
Sir, the interdiction field is coming down, and we have received communication from Source A. He is on the...
One moment.
Ocelage stabbed another button on the comm, cutting off the speaker. He picked up the handset and turned to the group before him.
My apologies to you all. I gave my word to keep discussions with... this source private.
While they waited for Admiral Ocelage, Lando, Kalenda, and Gariel went up to the bridge to get a better view of what was going on. What could be seen from there did not exactly make Lando happy. The tactical schematic display showed the Sentinel, the Defender, the relative positions of Talus, Trallis, and Centerpoint, and at least 50 unidentified ships, with more appearing at every moment.
The Sicurian fleet, Lando said to Kalenda. The Triad fleet that Tendra warned us about.
But what are they doing here? Kalenda demanded. Whose side are they on?
I think a better question might be who is on their side.
Admiral Ocelage had appeared beside them.
I expect that fleet is in search of the people who have caused them the most trouble in this system. And I'm afraid our little squadron does not meet that qualification.
Who's caused them more trouble than we have? Gariel demanded. The Human League, Kalenda answered. The Human League hijacked their whole operation, or at least tried to.
Exactly. The Sicurians, or at least the Triad who rule that world, they were the ones behind it all.
The Triad? Gariel asked.
That is the name given to the joint dictatorship that rules Sicoria. One human, one Drawl, one Salonian. No one knows anything about the three dictators, not even their names. I believe they discovered the secret of Centerpoint and recruited malcontents on the various worlds to front revolutions for them, something they could hide behind while digging up the repulsors.
How do you know all this? Kalenda asked.
I know almost none of it, Ocelage said. I am guessing. I am also guessing that something went wrong with the plan. And the something was named Thraken Salsolo. Somehow or another, he inveigled his way into the inner reaches of the Starbuster plot, and he betrayed it.
But what are you going to do about those ships? Gariel asked Ocelage. They've been continuing to arrive while we've been talking here. There must be 75 of them out there. Shouldn't we be getting back to Centerpoint to help out Defender and Sentinel?
No. The intruder must complete her mission here before rejoining the other ships. The assault on the repulsor is still our top priority.
Han Solo paced the ground before the Villa prison where he, Luke, Mara, Leia, and Drachmas had just had dinner.
Honored Drachmas, please, Han said, explain to me why it's in our best interest to just sit here and wait. Very well. The three things that matter most to Salonians are honor, consensus, and the Den. The Triad Salonians on Sicuria descend from the despised offshoot of a bloodline discredited long ago. Some of them tried to lie and cheat their way into a position of advantage over other members of their own Den. They were kicked off Corellia by my ancestors, the Hunchuzok, and also removed from Salonia by the Overden. They formed a new Den, under a new name, because the old name was utterly dishonored. Even now I must not speak it.
Han said,
If I've got this straight, now that Klaevitz has admitted to being in the pay of the Triad with this despised group, that changes everything, right? Right. The Overden achieved a consensus favorable to themselves by trickery. And by involving themselves with a dishonored and nameless Den. Even worse, the nameless Den was linked to Triad, and Triad linked to Salsolo, who kidnaps his own. Now, Hunchuzok will take over.
But the Sicurian Salonians are still the ones running the repulsor, Luke objected.
Yes, and so we must wait. We will talk with Sicurian scums, nasty though job will be. Finally, peer pressure on Sicurians to give up will be too much. They will cooperate with Hunchuzok, tell us how to run machinery as part of their penance for being on the losing side.
How long do we have to wait? Asked Luke. Jacquemus shook her head.
An hour? A day? A month? A year?
Luke frowned. An hour we have, maybe even a day, but not much longer. Center Point Station is going to fire at Bovo-Yagan in just over 84 hours.
Should I reset the breaker now? Jason asked.
Not yet.
Just a sec, said Anakin.
One more to stick in.
He was lying on his stomach, leaning over the open underfloor access panel. He stared down into the morass of wires and cables and circuit boards, then made some adjustments.
All right. Push the reset.
There was the slightest of pauses, and then the green status light came on. Jason breathed a sigh of relief, then turned to Q9.
It worked, Chewbacca. We ought to have repulsors and sublight engines now.
There was something more than a bit incongruous about Chewbacca's voice coming from Q9's speaker.
We have to hurry,
Q9 translated. Jason got to his feet.
Okay, we're hurrying.
Jason paused at the entrance to the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. He had been up here many times before, of course, but this was different. No one was keeping an eye on him this time, or making sure he didn't press any buttons, or shooing him away. No, this time he was here to fly the ship. The very idea terrified him. He took his place at the pilot's station, adjusting the seat as high and as far forward as it would go.
All right, Chewie, we're switching over to the ship's main comm system now.
He reached over to the comm panel and threw the appropriate switch.
That's a relief, said Q9.
Jason glanced behind him and made sure that Anakin, seated in the observer seat behind Jaina, had his belt on. Q9 had clamped himself to a stanchion.
Everyone set?
Not quite, said Jaina.
Those humanly guys are going to come after us the moment we take off. Maybe we should sort of slow down good old cousin Thrakken a little bit.
Wait a second, protested Jason.
But Jaina had already activated the fire controls for the Falcon's ventral laser cannon.
I figure one shot at the force field generator, then I re-aim and take a crack at the assault boat.
The force field generator, Jason said. Suppose you miss and hit Chewie and the Drawls.
I can't hit them. They're behind the force field, remember? You just be ready to get us moving straight up the repulsors the second I tell you to.
Jason shook his head doubtfully.
All right. But remember whose idea it was to start shooting.
Jaina stared down at the gunnery display, making minute adjustments to the ventral laser's aim.
Here we go. One, two, three.
A blast of fire roared from the ventral laser cannon, catching the force field generator square in the center of the control panel. The force field winked out of existence. Jaina swung the laser cannon around in the general direction of the assault boat and fired again. The shot missed the boat completely, the blast of light bouncing off the reflective walls of the chamber to ricochet around a dozen times before it dissipated. She fired again and scored a glancing hit. Jason could see Chewbacca and the two Drawl running for the nearest entrance to the side caverns.
Jaina, the way those shots are ricocheting, you're more likely to hit Chewie than Thrakken.
You're right. Let's get out of here. Everyone hang on. I've never done this before.
He pulled back on the repulsor power control, and the Millennium Falcon lumbered up into the sky.
Behind us, Anakin shouted. Look at the detector screen.
There was Thrakken's assault boat hot on their heels. A blast of laser flared past the Falcon's starboard side, and Jason heeled the ship up, flipping her over. The Falcon was suddenly climbing at a 45-degree angle of attack, but with the cockpit pointed down instead of up. The accidental maneuver seemed to have shaken Thrakken off their tail, at least for the moment, but he would be back, and he'd start shooting at them again.
Shields up! Jason shouted.
Where are the shield controls? Jaina asked.
Chewie moved them when he rewired the cockpit,
Anakin said from the observer seat.
Under your left hand, sort of, the panel with the big red buttons.
Where? Where? I don't see it.
I'll get it.
Anakin undid his seat restraint, hopped out of his seat, and wriggled in between the two pilot stations. He reached in and flicked the safeties off a row of red switches.
pressed down on a big red button and twisted two dials.
All right, now shields up.
The shudder that ran through the ship told Jason that Anakin had gotten the shields up just in time, and that Cousin Thrakken's aim was getting better.
Shoot!
Thrakken shouted.
Shoot! Blast your eyes!
The boat's captain, a fat, bald man named Thrag, was used to taking orders from Thrakken, but he was not afraid of him. He protested.
But they're your own blood relatives!
I'd shoot at them myself. I'm not hypocrite enough to pretend there's a difference.
Thrag turned his attention from his flying and looked Thrakken up and down.
Do your own dirty work, then, and welcome to it!
And Thrag switched over gunnery control. Ocelage's ensign rushed into the flag deck of the intruder.
Sir, two ships just came out of the repulsor, one in pursuit of the other.
Ocelage stabbed a button on the flag deck's main console, and the commander of his assault troops responded.
Putney here.
Commander Putney, this is Ocelage. It looks like everyone has cleared out of the repulsor. I want your troops headed toward an assault speed landing in the repulsor immediately.
Ocelage turned toward Kalenda.
Get me visual and tactical on the two ships now.
Kalenda worked the controls with lightning speed. The images of two ships appeared on the long-range visual scanner. Both were clawing for altitude, the one in the lead flying erratically and upside down.
That's the Falcon, Lando said.
Who's flying her? Kalenda asked.
I have an idea, but none of you would believe me.
Ocelage looked at him sharply.
You're saying one of the children is flying that ship?
You said it. I didn't.
Wait until they're both in range, and then get tractor beams on both of them. Pull the Falcon in, but just hold the assault boat where it is, at least for the moment.
The Falcon lurched wildly to one side as the assault boat managed another hit. Anakin watched the defense display. Shields didn't like that one.
That's it, said Jaina. I've had it. Let's give them some of their own back. Powering up ventral laser cannon and setting for aft aim.
What? Jason cried. Are you out of your mind?
I think you're all out of your minds, Q9 said.
Ventral laser on auto target seek. I've got a target lock.
Jaina squeezed the trigger and the laser cannon blazed away.
Hit him! Shields absorbed the shot, but I made him back off a little.
Jason risked a peek at the detector screen.
Jaina, he's not backing off. He's bringing his main turret cannon to bear. We've got to get out of here.
Jason pulled the nose of the Falcon up, right on Thrakken's tail.
Anakin! Forward shields to full!
Anakin scrambled to reset the switches. Just in time to deflect a near miss from the assault boat's turret gun. The Falcon bucked and shuddered, but her shields held.
We're in behind their shields! I have a shot! Hang on!
Jaina called.
She fired.
The shot caught the turret gun, blowing it clean off the hull.
She fired again,
smashing the sublight emitters down to nothing. The assault boat was dead in space. Jason had to stop cheering long enough to keep from ramming the Falcon right into her stern. And then, a giant invisible hand reached out and yanked the Millennium Falcon by the scruff of the neck. Han, Leia, and Mara were still waiting. Drachmas was still telling them to be patient. It seemed as if nothing was ever going to happen. And then a noise came from Mara's pocket. At exactly the same moment, R2 started spinning his view dome back and forth. Mara shoved her hand in the pocket of her coveralls and pulled out a comlink.
I forgot I had this thing. That's a call from the ship's monitoring systems. A high-priority message just came in.
R2?
Asked Luke. Are you getting it too? R2 let off an affirmative-sounding trill.
Gotta be the same one. I've got to go over to the Jade's Fire to read my copy. Anyone care to tag along and see what it is?
At the ship's command station, Mara hit the play button, and a hologram of Lando shimmered into view.
Hello. I don't know exactly what your situation is, so I will send copies of this to all of you. A lot has happened. The bad news is that the real enemy has finally shown up. It's the fleet from the Sikorian Triad.
Lando broke into a broad smile.
The good news is very good indeed. The children have escaped from Thraken, and they did it aboard the Millennium Falcon. They flew the ship, and before you turn blue, Han, the Falcon doesn't have so much as a scratch on her. But the punchline is they captured Thraken. Han, you should have seen it. The kids flew a classic inside loop and put two disabling shots right into Thraken's stern. The Bakurans have taken Thraken prisoner. The kids are safe and sound aboard the intruder. Chewbacca and two Drow who got mixed up in all this are being picked up from the repulsor right now. My third reason for sending you this message is to ask you to come here. Gariel Captison has called a council of war for 18 hours from now. We need you all present.
Leia Organa Solo, chief of state of the New Republic, ran full tilt down the access ramp of the Jade's Fire onto the hangar deck of the intruder and nearly knocked over two of the honor guard as she rushed to her children. Han was hard on her heels, and Luke soon joined the happy little knot of chaos. Admiral Ocelage allowed himself a wintry smile as he stood by Gariel Captison, watching the proceedings.
"Not the most dignified of entrances, eh, Madam Prime Minister?"
Gariel thought of her own little daughter, Malinza, back home on Bakura. She watched Luke Skywalker lifting his niece up onto his shoulders and thought of how good he was with children, and of all the things that might have been between the two of them, but never could be now. "I think it's beautiful." Admiral Hortel Ocelage regarded her with frank surprise.
"Indeed. Clearly, then, standards of beauty vary greatly. Mine do not include noisy and unruly children."
"Then I pity you. I know of nothing else that brings more beauty into my life." Gariel stepped forward, leaving a stunned Admiral Ocelage in her wake. "Let the old sourpuss chew on that for a while," she told herself.
Belindi Kalenda addressed the Council of War, gathered on the flag deck of the intruder.
"To cover the simple side of this situation first, the enemy is closing in on Centerpoint. They need to keep us from interfering with the next Tarbuster burst. Considering the number of lives at stake, I do not think anyone will disagree with me when I suggest that the destruction of our entire force would indeed be a low enough price for victory. And we must face the fact that we run such a risk. We have 3 major combatant ships, carrying a total of 32 flight-worthy fighters. The enemy has at least 80 larger spacecraft. If all of them carried a full complement of fighters, though I very much doubt they do, the number of fighters on their side would be well up in the hundreds. The complicated side of the situation is that we almost but not quite control 2 of the repulsors, the one on Dral and the one on Salonia.
Unless, said Mara, the Triad's people are sitting on the Talusian and Tralusian and Corellian repulsors just waiting for the signals to push the button.
Exactly right, said Kalenda. If the enemy controls those, he has the ability to crush our ships to rubble.
But we don't think they have that capability, Ocelage said. Their fleet is moving in with a great deal of caution.
That caution might also explain why they haven't reactivated the interdiction field, said Mara. They might want to be sure they have a way out of here.
That's possible, said Jenica Sonson. But we don't think they can reactivate it while Centerpoint is at this stage of powering itself up for a Starbuster shot. Too much power being diverted, too many systems busy. At least we think that's the case.
It better be the case, said Ocelage. Our plans with Source A depend on it.
Excuse, please, said Drachmas. What or who is Source A?
We'll come to that a bit later, Ocelage said.
What about Centerpoint itself? Han asked. Is there any weak spot we know about? Some place where we might pile in a lot of firepower and get lucky, blow the place up?
I know, sorry, said Sonson. It doesn't work that way. Don't forget that the Glow Point is a containment vessel for an extremely powerful reaction. It's very strong, and it's very good at absorbing and dispersing energy. The figures we worked up show that the energy levels in there at the moment are the equivalent of setting off a proton torpedo at least once a second.
and Centerpoint has been putting up with that for days on end. The rest of the structure is very strong and very old, and so well sealed and shielded that we've never been able to map most of the interior. I'm told the Sentinel has landed search parties that are doing their best to find the control system and shut the system down. But that control system has kept itself pretty well hidden for at least 1,000 generations. I doubt they'll find it in just a day or two of looking.
Let's talk about the repulsors for a minute, said Luke. Where are we with them? How about the Solonian repulsor, Drachmas?
The Solonian shook her head mournfully.
There is no changing. The Sikorian Solonians, the triad Solonians of the Nameless Den, are weakening. They see the force of our arguments. We have tried everything, but they are not with us yet.
Have you tried Kash? Mara asked.
I am begging your pardon.
Cash. Money. A travel case full of credit notes. You know, a bribe. Or make it sound nice, call it a consulting fee. Tell them you want to hire them.
Drachmas looked amazed.
This had never been occurring to us. We will try it at once.
Good. And don't be cheap about it.
What about our repulsor?
Asked the drawl Ebrahim.
Have you made any progress with it?
Ocelage responded,
Our tech staff has only had a few hours to work on it. It's early to expect results, but rest assured we have every person with pertinent experience down there working right now.
That is not the case,
said a stern female voice. It was the other drawl, Marcha, the Duchess of Mastigophorus.
It is not the case, Admiral, and you know it.
Duchess, might I ask what you are talking about?
The children. Anakin in particular, but he works best when the other two are there to guide him.
Don't be absurd. How could they possibly have any expertise? I would urge you not to mistake a series of lucky accidents for ability. Continue with the briefing, Lieutenant.
Kalinda hesitated a moment. It was not her place to contradict her superior officer, but on the other hand, it was not his place to be a pig-headed fool. Sir, my apologies for discussing this in front of others, but the stakes are too high. I believe you are making a mistake.
What?
Sir, it is my job to analyze events and come to conclusions. The plain fact of the matter is that you have a repulsor down there because a 7.5-year-old boy found it for you and turned it on. It is no longer in the hands of our enemy, and our enemy is in the brig, because that boy and his siblings managed to walk through a working force field, repair a disabled starship, fly that ship into space, and shoot down a pursuing spacecraft flown by a professional military pilot.
Ocelage looked up at Kalinda.
You argue most effectively, Lieutenant Kalinda. You will either go far as an intelligence officer, or end your career in the brig for insubordination. Madam Chief of State, Captain Solo, if, as Lieutenant Kalinda claims, your children might be of help, would you consent to their being put to work?
We need all the help we can get, said Leia. Let them do their part.
After the war council broke up, there were plenty of goodbyes. The children went back to Drawl with Drachmas, Ebrahim, and Q-9 to work on the repulsor. Everyone else prepared for battle. They all knew the odds were against everyone making it back. But one leave-taking had a different set of emotions behind it. Thraken was sitting on a low bench set against the far wall of the brig.
Hello, Thraken, Han said.
Hello, Han. Come to see the rare specimen in his cage?
I'm not sure why I came. For some reason, I wanted to see you.
Thraken threw his arms out wide and stuck his chest out.
And here I am. Get a good look.
The children. My children. You should not have kidnapped the children. Never involve the innocent. Always protect your family. Two of the oldest traditions of Corellia. How could you break those laws?
Thraken sighed wearily.
Han,
Please, there's not much point in teaching me right from wrong, not at this late date.
You're beaten, Thraken.
Thraken chuckled. True enough, but I do have one consolation.
What's that? Thraken Salsola, would-be diktat of Corellia, gestured vaguely toward the outside of the cell, toward the universe beyond.
The Triad fleet out there. Maybe I've lost, Han. But it does me a world of good to know that you haven't won yet, and I don't think you're going to either.
At last it was time to board ship, launch, and head out into space. Once clear of the intruder, Han eased back on the sublight engines and waited for the others to form up behind him. They were going into battle together. Han, Chewie, and Leia aboard the Millennium Falcon, Mara Jade alone aboard the Jade's Fire, Lando aboard the Lady Luck, and Luke in his X-Wing. Han watched as the Lady Luck flew out of the hangar doors and toward him.
Suddenly, he felt good.
They were flying into danger, into battle, but what of that? He had done it before. He was behind the controls of his own ship, in space, surrounded by friends. He saw the Lady Luck do a double barrel roll just as Luke's X-Wing launched. Han laughed out loud. He wasn't the only one feeling good. He keyed on the comm system.
Falcon to Lady Luck. Lando, you old pirate, the idea is to fly in a straight line just at the moment. I think you just wobbled off course a bit.
Can't a guy have a little fun now and then?
How far have you gotten?
Asked Anakin, as he looked over the gleaming silver control panel. The technician's name was Antone, a thin fellow, dark-skinned, with shoulder-length shiny black hair. He didn't answer at first, but instead gave Anakin a strange look, a look Anakin had seen before. It was the look he got from grown-ups who had heard he was weirdly good with machines, but didn't quite believe it yet.
I'd say we're stuck. The system won't respond to any commands we give it.
Sure it will.
Anakin sat down at the control panel and pushed his hand down onto a flat, featureless spot on the console. The surface of the console started to shift, forming a joystick perfectly shaped to his hand. A hollow wireframe of cubes appeared in the air over the control panel.
How did you do that?
Antone demanded. He scooted Anakin out of the chair and pressed his own hand down on the same place on the panel. Nothing happened.
Burning stars. It must have imprinted itself on your personal characteristics the first time you used it.
Wait a moment, Ebrahim objected. Are you saying what I think you're saying?
Antone nodded solemnly.
Your little friend here is the only person who is going to be able to operate this control panel.
Gariel Captison watched Admiral Ocelage pace the floor of the flag deck and could not help but feel sympathy for the man. They were, for the moment, alone on the flag deck, and that fact spoke volumes. He had told everyone to go off and do his bidding, and now they were gone. Later, perhaps, this place would be chaos, with aides rushing in and out, mountains of message forms covering every flat surface, klaxons blaring, and orders bellowing out from the overhead speakers. But now, it was quiet. The overhead speaker came on.
All outbound craft launched and clear. Intruder getting underway in 30 seconds. All hands to assigned battle stations.
Ocelage sat motionless throughout the announcement. Gariel could not tell whether he was listening intently or lost in his own thoughts. The chime sounded again. There was a change in the vibrations of the ship, and the flag deck instruments started reporting forward movement. They were on their way. Ocelage spoke after a long silence.
Tell me, the plan. Do you think it will work?
The irony was almost too obvious. After endless weeks of being trapped aboard the Gentleman Caller, wishing above all else to move faster, Tendra Rezaant now had not the slightest desire for her ship to go anywhere at all. The Gent floated quietly in the darkness of space in a stable orbit around Corel, an orbit that put her squarely between the Triad fleet and the two Bakurin destroyers. She had no doubt that both sides were tracking her. She did not dare maneuver for fear of one side or the other deciding she was a booby trap, a bomb, or a weapon disguised as a civilian ship. No one knew exactly what was going to happen next. But whatever it was, Tendra was going to have a ringside seat. Lando Calrissian punched up his detector system and tried to get an idea of how the Triad fleet was reacting. So far, they didn't seem to be in the least bit distracted by the intruder. The whole fleet was still moving in toward Centerpoint at a slow, steady pace. Wait a second. Lando frowned at his display. Where could that ship have come from? How could anybody get here before the Triad unless... Lando sat bolt upright. He punched the transmit button.
Lady luck to intruder. I've just spotted something. I'm heading over to investigate it. I'll be back with the fleet in good time for the main event.
To Ebrahim's eye, the control room of Drawl's planetary repulsor looked as if a bomb had hit it. It was knee-deep in crumpled bits of paper and discarded food containers. Jaina and Jason were asleep on cots. Ebrahim and Marcha were still in the thick of it, helping the techs order their readings. Anakin was in the center of it all, going strong, working the controls as he was asked, helping the grown-ups understand what all the buttons meant.
Drachmas rushed into the room.
Newses! I have good newses! The Sakurian Salonians! What a splendid idea this bribing was! Must congratulate honored Jade on fine suggestion!
They've agreed to cooperate?
Ebrahim asked eagerly. No, honored Ebrahim. Bribe suggestion gives them idea.
Drachmas held up a data pad and waved it in the air.
They still not willing to help with their repulsor, but they willing to sell instruction manual.
A large booming noise echoed through the hull of Tendra Rizant's ship, the gentleman caller. Had a meteor crashed into the ship? Had something in the engine room blown up? Then Tendra heard the whirring noise of doors sliding open and air pumps working.
The airlock. Someone had docked with her ship.
She stepped out into the corridor and froze in her tracks.
There he was, right in front of her, grinning from ear to ear.
I tried to call ahead, but there wasn't any answer.
All right, Chewie, said Han. Jump off in 5 minutes. Let's look sharp. Leia, time for you to get up to the turret.
Leia stood up from the observer's seat on the Millennium Falcon.
I know, she said.
But she didn't leave. First, she stepped forward, pulled Han's head toward hers, and gave him a kiss.
I love you.
I know. And you know I love you.
Leia reached over and ruffled the fur on top of Chewbacca's head.
So long, Chewie. See you on the other side.
Han watched her go, then looked over to Chewbacca.
You know, Chewie, there's a lot to be said for this being married business.
Luke Skywalker sat in the cockpit of his X-Wing and felt the old tingle of fear and excitement starting to build. It was time to fight. He was ready. His Jedi abilities made him more ready. He glanced at his chronometer. 3 minutes. Belindi Kalenda was already on the flag deck along with the rest of the flag staff, but Gariel Captison just got there in time to strap herself in.
I was in my cabin, she said, though Ocelage hadn't asked, meditating and thinking about my daughter, Malinza, who has already lost her father. Is this the day she loses her mother as well, she thought.
A good time for it, Ocelage said.
There will not be much leisure for thought, starting in another 30 seconds.
10 seconds. All hands prepare for the jump to light speed. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
And the stars lanced out into spikes of fire.
Now there were more than stars in the sky. Ships of all sizes and descriptions had suddenly popped into existence. The Bacurian ships had made precision hyperspace jumps straight into the thick of the enemy fleet.
The intruder's main laser cannon opened up at once, stabbing out at a ramshackle old troop transport that had no business in the middle of a combat fleet. The transport exploded in a bloom of fire. But by then, the main lasers had found another target, an old, tough-looking ex-Imperial destroyer. The intruder opened up on her. The destroyer's forward battery blew up, and the intruder instantly redirected fire to her rear battery. The shields gave way after.
"It's going well,"
Ocelage announced to no one in particular. At least, thought Gariel, it's starting well.
"Hang on, R2!"
Luke cried out, as he flipped his X-Wing over onto its back and then pulled its nose up, pursuing the X-Tie Ugly that was making a run on the Lady Luck.
"Lando, brake starboard and down hard on my mark. 3, 2, 1, mark!"
Luke broke the X-Wing down and to starboard a fraction of a second before the Lady Luck. The X-Tie Ugly, a monstrosity of a ship slapped together out of the combined wreckage of an X-Wing and a TIE fighter, was nowhere as maneuverable as an X-Wing. The Ugly fell into the trap, making a longer, shallower dive in pursuit of the Lady Luck, and setting itself up for a perfect shot from Luke. He fired, and the wing blew clean off the Ugly, sending it tumbling out of control and out of the fight. For the moment, their little patch of sky was clear. That meant it was time to move elsewhere.
"Lando, I'm tracking a slow-moving destroyer toward the rear of the formation. You have it?"
"Let's go for it. Just what we're looking for."
The plan was for the attacking craft to move through the Triad formation toward its rear, picking off targets and trying to get the Triad ships to reverse course and pursue.
"Off we go," Luke agreed.
Anakin sat in the control chair, listening intently to Technician Antone as he ran down the checklist.
"All right, that clears out the targeting sequence. We should be locked onto the south pole of Centerpoint. Ready for the power initiation sequence?"
"Don't think so," Anakin said doubtfully. "Something doesn't feel right."
Antone looked nervously at him.
"Feel right? He does it all by feel," Jason said. "You've got an instruction manual. You're the one who said you didn't think he understood what it did."
Anakin glared at his brother.
"Do so!"
Jaina was plainly getting as fed up as Antone.
"Do you, Anakin? Do you really understand? Or are you just showing off?"
Anakin crossed his arms.
"Stop being mean to me, or I won't help you anymore."
And with that, he hopped down off the chair and stalked away.
"I suspect that young Master Anakin is overtired,"
3PO said.
"He was up too late last night. He's often rather cranky the next day on such occasions."
Antone's jaw dropped open.
"The Starbuster is going to fire in an hour, and you tell me he's cranky?"
"Take it easy," Ebrahim said.
"But he's gone, and he's the only one who can run the machine."
"Concentrate volley fire on the forward airlock hatch,"
Mara's voice called over the Millennium Falcon's comm.
"Those welds look nice and sloppy."
Turbo laser shots poured from the Jade's fire into the bulky old Mon Calamari frigate that had ended up fighting for the other side. In the quad laser turret, Leia started shooting, and the frigate fired back straight into the Falcon. The shield alarms went on almost at once, and then cut off just as quickly, as the Jade's fire blew the frigate's main laser turret clean off.
"Let her go," Han said to Mara. "She's out of the fight."
Then he saw something else and called to Leia.
"Watch out! A pair of B-Wing Uglies coming in from above." "I'm on them."
An explosion broke up one B-Wing, and the other decided that discretion was the better part of valor. If only the Falcon could have the luxury of reaching that conclusion, Leia thought. Sooner or later, one of those attacks was going to get through. On the intruder flag deck, Kalinda reported to Admiral Ocelage. "Defender reports damage to main armament, but secondary weapons fully functional. Sentinel has partial loss of propulsion." Ocelage studied his tactical display. It was working, he thought. The tidy enemy formations were unraveling, and half of them had reversed course to head off in pursuit of their tormentors.
"Sir! Captain Zemek reports 4 frigates closing on intruder. It appears to be a coordinated attack."
4 identical bulbous-nosed frigates were closing in from 4 different directions, lasers blazing, as the ships adjusted course to stay with the intruder, matching her move for move. Ocelage frowned. Something was wrong. The frigates were pouring laser fire into the intruder, but it was having no effect. There should have been local burn-throughs. The shield should have been weakened here and there. He brought up a close-up view of the nearest frigate on his tactical display, and his blood ran cold. Its windows were painted on over what looked like solid Durasteel. He slapped down his comlink.
Captain Semek, those frigates are camouflaged robot ram ships. Their guns are harmless. They are merely trying to get in close enough to...
But it was too late. The first ram ship fired its high-boost engine and accelerated at terrifying speed directly at the intruder, a multi-megaton battering ram headed straight at them. Holding Anakin by the hand, Jason came back to the group gathered around the repulsor control.
Okay, said Jason. I have him back.
While Jason had gone to talk to Anakin, Ebrahim tried to persuade everyone else not to lose patience with the little boy. Good, said Antone. Then let's start the power initiation sequence.
No.
The sweat was standing out on Antone's forehead.
Anakin, please. Try to understand, this isn't a game. Lots of people, lots and lots of people, are going to die unless we fire this repulsor at exactly the right time, in exactly the right direction. I know that, but it isn't aimed just right. It's too heavy, somehow.
Gravity, Jason shouted. He means gravity. Those instructions you got are for the repulsor on Salonia. The gravity is different there. Antone thought for a minute, muttering frantically.
He's right. He's right. He checked the countdown clock. And we've got 10 minutes to recalculate the aim from scratch.
And with that, Antone raced away to find a desk and a data pad. The second and the third robot ram ship slammed into the intruder, sending the ruined hulk pinwheeling across the sky.
Abandon ship. All hands abandon ship.
I can't feel my legs, Gariel said. I can see they're bleeding, but I can't feel them.
Ocelage nodded. Spinal damage, he thought. He realized that he was holding his hand over his stomach. He lifted it away and saw the red, open wound. Ocelage looked from himself to Gariel Captisan, to Kalenda.
Go!
He shouted at Kalenda.
We can't make it. You can. Go!
But,
Kalenda began,
I have a gut wound and the Prime Minister cannot walk. Go, now. That is an order. You have been a good officer, Lieutenant Kalenda. Do not waste yourself now over a pointless gesture. Go.
Kalenda looked as if she were about to say something more, but then she stopped. She saluted Ocelage, bowed to Gario, and then turned and ran.
We have to blow the ship,
Gario said.
Don't let her be captured.
Yes, you are right, but we must wait. Give the survivors time to escape. Wait until we are in deep among the enemy ships. Take them with us. Wait. Wait for Source A. We have to wait for Admiral Akbar.
One hour, Luke,
Lando shouted.
Let's get out of here while we're still in one piece.
Copy that. Back the way we came, and fast.
What's going on? Tendra asked.
Why are we retreating?
Lando heeled the Lady Luck around.
We're not retreating. We're following Ocelage's plan. Get in, do as much damage as you can for 1 hour, and then get out of the way.
Get out of the way for what?
For Source A, my dear Source T.
What are you talking about?
Lando laughed.
It's not much of a code name system. Source T for Tendra, Source A for Admiral Akbar.
Ocelage started getting coded hyperwave messages from him the minute the jamming field went down.
When does he show up?
Lando checked the ship's navicomputer and the chronometer.
Right here and right now.
The empty space in front of them was suddenly ablaze with the flaring light of starships coming in out of hyperspace. The ship screamed past the Lady Luck to either side, over her, under her, so close that they could almost hear the winds of space rushing past them. And then they were gone.
Gariel Captison was starting to feel the pain, not in her legs, but everywhere else.
Admiral Ostalich sat beside her, barely conscious himself, bleeding badly. In spite of everything, Ostalich had managed to open up the control panel set into the side of his chair. The ship's self-destruct. He had flicked up all the safeties and pushed down all the buttons, all but the last.
"There,"
he said.
"There. Ship's coming in. They're here." "It's time, then,"
said Gariel.
"You're a good man, Admiral Ostalich. You did your duty. You held them. You stopped them. Well done." "Thank you, ma'am. I was proud to serve with you." "And I with you. But now it's time to go."
Gariel thought of her daughter, Malinza, left all alone in the universe. She would be cared for. Of that Gariel had no fear.
I can't move my arm," said Ostalich. "I can't push the button."
Gariel looked up and saw that at least three Triad ships were near. She smiled and reached over.
"Here, let me."
The explosion lit the sky, tore a hole across the Triad fleet.
"Oh," said Tendra. "That was the intruder. They're gone. It's over."
Lando looked down at the ship chronometer, then at Centerpoint Station, and then toward the distant dot of light that was Drow.
"No, it isn't. But in 1 minute and 20 seconds, it will be. Maybe for a lot of people."
"Antone!"
Jaina shouted.
"Now! Now! We have to do it now!"
Technician Antone came rushing back in.
"I can't."
He held up the datapad.
"It's still running. The last part of the problem is still running. It won't be done for another 5 minutes, at least. 12 million people! 12 million people!
Antone sat down on the floor and covered his head with his hands. Jason Solo stood riveted to the spot, his eyes wide. They had one chance to make this work.
"Wait a second. Who needs numbers?"
He turned toward his brother, still seated at the console.
"Anakin, it felt too heavy, right? Can you fix it? Can you close your eyes and feel it? Make it feel right?"
Anakin looked at his brother and his sister, swallowed hard, then shut his eyes.
"Yeah. Yeah."
Eyes still closed, he held out his hands for controls that weren't there, controls that took form under his hands even as he reached for them. Glowing grids of orange and purple and green appeared and flared up and vanished around his head, but Anakin did not see them. Deep beneath their feet, a vibration began to build. They heard the crash of thunder from the repulsor, the sound of power being gathered. The joystick materialized. Anakin pushed it slowly forward, and a cube of orange appeared before his still-closed eyes. He made tiny, imperceptible adjustments, and then he pulled the joystick down as hard as he could. The chamber shuddered with power, and a stream of lightning blazed down the corridor and out into the chamber. They could not see it in the control chamber, except for Anakin, who saw everything perfectly from behind closed eyes. But those on the surface and those in space could see the repulsor beam leap across space, land square on the south end of Centerpoint, just as every countdown clock reached zero, just at the moment Centerpoint was to fire. The South Pole lit up with the energy that was supposed to stream out invisible, undetected into hyperspace and murder a star. But the repulsor beam broke up the opening into hyperspace, defocused the beam, detuned it enough that part of its energy was converted into visible light. The south pole of Centerpoint began to glow. The glow spread into a magnificent bubble of harmless light that lit the skies of all the Corellian worlds, shining, blooming, growing, and then guttering down to nothing. Lando Calrissian watched it all from the deck of the gentleman caller and started breathing again.
"Now," he said to Tendra. "Now it's over."
I don't even know why you were so eager to have my fleet come here, said Admiral Ackbar in his gravelly voice.
He turned and regarded Luke Skywalker through his fish-like eyes. They were on Drawl, as Ackbar had been curious to inspect the repulsor.
There was hardly any work left for my ships to do, thanks to Admiral Osage and Geriel Capterson.
Thanks to them, yes, sir, said Luke. Luke thought of Geriel, of her daughter Malinza. Luke had promised Malinza he would take care of her mother. How was that debt to be paid? He thought of Osage, of the difficult, impossible man who also had a knack for doing the difficult, the impossible. I will mourn them both for a long time to come, he said. But we have won, thanks to them and many others, and thanks to those three children over there.
Anakin and Jason and Jaina were racing around climbing the hummocks of dirt that the repulsor had forced up when it shoved its way out of the ground. They were being chased by a laughing Jenica Sonson and Belindi Kalenda, who was too busy making ferocious faces to laugh. Han and Leia chuckled as their children turned the tables and started chasing Sonson and Kalenda. Mara watched the fun, and even Chewbacca was enjoying the show. Not far off, Ebrahim and the Duchess Marcha were intent in conversation. Leia had told Luke of her plan to appoint Marcha the new Governor-General of the Sector. Drachmas sat by the two Drawl, apparently so enthralled with their conversation that she had fallen sound asleep.
You're right, of course, Admiral Ackbar answered Luke. But no one wins a war. There are just different degrees of losing.
Luke nodded. But at least some of the loose ends were being tied up already. Admiral Ackbar brought news of the arrest of one Farnes Gleesri, self-styled agent of the Human League, part of the spy ring that had sliced its way into far too many government files back on Coruscant. The entire Human League spy ring back in Coruscant had been thrown in jail, where they belonged. There was, of course, the question of what to do about the next star on the Starbuster list. And then there was the whole question of studying Centerpoint and the repulsors on the other three worlds. Who had built the Corellian system, and when? And why? And what had happened to them? Some ends were looser than others.
You know, said Admiral Ackbar, you said it was the people here who won this war. I can't help noticing two rather prominent people who seem to be missing. Where in the world have they gone to?
Luke smiled. I wouldn't worry too much, Admiral. They're both pretty good at taking care of themselves.
Lando? Said Tendra Rezaunt as they wandered about on the churned-up land that the repulsor had produced. It was not the loveliest of landscapes, but it did have the advantage of providing a good deal of privacy behind every hummock and furrow. Remember how I told you that a Sikorian woman is not allowed to marry without her father's consent, no matter how old she is?
Yes.
Lando managed to keep his voice steady.
What about it?
Well, we don't have to do anything about it immediately, but there's something more I want to tell you about that law. An interesting legal technicality. It's been well established by many precedents that a Sikorian woman is not bound by that law if she is outside the Sikorian system, if she were on, Drow, for example.
Is that so?
Lando quickly regained his old equilibrium. The idea needed time, but he definitely liked it at first glance. He smiled and looked at her lovely face.
Is that a certifiable fact?
She smiled back at him. It is.
Then why don't we get back to the Lady Luck and discuss the whole matter over dinner? I've always found legal technicalities to be downright fascinating.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Showdown at Centerpoint by Roger McBride Allen. This program was produced by David Ratkin and directed by Lars Howell.
Abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Showdown at Centerpoint is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 1995. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.